Free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can tune in live at freeenergynow.net to see our past shows, archives, get the call-in numbers if you want to join us live, if you're listening live. We have as our guest today Frank Prusserk. He is the CEO of Capital Max, Inc. It's an investment advisory group whose mission is to add long-term value without taking undue risk. They're looking also into starting a renewable energy fund in the United States. This is a little bit unusual of a topic for us. We typically focus on technologies themselves. We're looking at the reason for this particular interview is to kind of bone us up a little bit on the whole financial world in renewable energy. And Frank's involved in fairly mainstream projects, and what we typically talk about would probably be a little bit too risky for the types of things they would invest in. But I think it'd be a good primer for us to just get familiar with the industry in general and what people with lots of money are looking for in terms of stable investment. So, Frank, thanks for joining us.
Well, Sterling, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak my strategy here, which is, as you mentioned, a little bit different than what you do. But I think what I'm trying to do is to allow the Main Street investor to kind of participate in renewable energy while taking undue risk, as you just mentioned. In preamble, for example, I will give you, some examples of undue risk which were taken over the past couple of years, which have lost investors a lot of money, despite the fact that those investments were much mediatized and much hyped, basically. The two that come to mind are ethanol stocks with last year's well-known IPOs of Veresun and Aventin being down 60% since their IPO price. Another one called Earth Biofuel, endorsed by Willie Nelson, Julia Roberts, and Morgan Freeman. That company is now bankrupt, having lost in the process $1.6 billion to investors over that time span. So that's for ethanol. The other thing is, the other group that made it for a while what it was hyped was the fuel cell group, the fuel cell business. And as you know, the fuel cell, fuel cells have been worked on for at least 100 years. And it turns out that, most fuel cell stocks have lost people money. So my point, the problem I've had when faced with the demand from investors, which is, how do I participate? My answer was, there are a few ways we can participate. And in fact, I just highlighted the risks, but there have been some very good stocks that were investable in. And I'm talking here about publicly listed company only, not the type of companies that you're looking at, which are all very interesting.
Yeah, let's back up a little bit and talk about what you do as a company. What is an investment advisor capacity? And you have a limit, or somebody has to have at least $500,000 in liquid assets, et cetera, in order to play with you. And what do you do with that money? How do you operate? What's, talk about beta and alpha. Let's kind of get a little bit of a foundation here in what you do as a company.
Okay. That's basic money management 101, I would say. Alpha, we talked about this. Alpha is the potential for a portfolio to return to generate a return above the market. Now, the market can be defined by a few indices, such as the S&P, the Dow, the Russell, or for renewable energy, such as the Wilder Hill Eco Index, the Ardor Global Index, and there are a few others. But basically, the idea is an asset class which should be attractive is one that should provide with a positive alpha, meaning a return above the index return. That's one. Now, I'll get back to that when it comes down to renewable energy specifics. The beta, however, is a measure of risk, a measure of volatility. You know, it's one thing to buy a stock at 10, see it go up to 20, you're very happy. See it go back down to 10, you're less happy, and back up to 20. The question is, you know, with that kind of volatility, you better be right on the timing on your purchase and on your investment horizon. If you don't care about selling the stock over the short term, fine, at the end of the day, you may not care about volatility. But in the example I just gave you, suppose instead of buying at 10, you bought at 20, and the next thing you saw was 10, then you would have lost 50%. Now, where I am different from what I see in terms of products out there which invest in the renewable energy space is that most of my competitors tend to focus on stocks which I would call simply either pure plays, meaning high technology risk. Some of them define them as companies that generate more than 50% of their revenues from renewable energy, which is fine. But obviously, when you do that, you have a high technology risk, okay? Some others are pure green. And an example of pure green products where I stand apart from is that pure green usually, always, exclude nuclear. The latest fund that you sent me, which is the Winslow Management Company Fund, explicitly excludes nuclear from its portfolio. Another thing that pure green company investments would exclude is, in fact, some of the big winners of this year, which are called ENC company for engineering and construction company. Now, you know, I'll go back to the alpha, which has to deal with infrastructure building, but basically, ENC companies are excluded from those portfolios because they have what we call legacy business. Legacy business is business that they've been in for the past 10, 20, 30 years. And what that legacy business is, well, it's building oil plants, coal plants, which by green standards are not acceptable. The problem with that line of reasoning is that, unfortunately, those companies, the ENC companies, are the only ones who have the manpower to actually know how to build a plant. So when it comes down to building a renewable energy plant like biomass or nuclear or coal to liquids, unfortunately, those are the only guys who know how to do it. So that's for alpha, that's for beta. I'm sorry, in terms of asset size, as you can imagine, my research entails a lot of deep work, I wish it was deeper, but basically a lot of work, and it entails a lot of work across the spectrum of what we call the food chain. Now, the food chain goes from pure plays to utilities, which is, by the way, another sector which most of my competitors do not include. And I'll give you an example of why they should be included. in a portfolio, FPL, Florida Power and Light. Florida Power and Light operates the largest wind power farm in the UN, in the United States, 780 megawatts, and they're going to build 4,000 megawatts, and they operate nuclear plants. And their growth comes mostly from their renewable energy business, basically. So the point is, it entails a lot of work, and for me to do justice to my investors, I have to concentrate on a few investors, as opposed to smaller investors. Now, the reason why, that's for individual portfolios, and for individual portfolios, I will only take, as you mentioned, you know, portfolios with a minimum of $500,000, and there are less, you know, there are a few other criteria here. The reason for that is I briefly alluded to the spectrum of investments that I make. Again, they go from pure plays to utilities. Pure plays is the higher risk. Utilities is the lowest risk. Now, depending on what an investor would like as an exposure, some investors may say, you know what, I think I like your utilities exposure because you may want me to go into details about that, but I'll leave it to you for the questioning. But, you know, utilities being fairly low-risk investment, I pose because in 2007 they've proven to be more volatile than they used to be over time. But the fact of the matter is they usually provide a higher yield, you know, like 2, 3, 4, 5%, and therefore they tend to be conservative investments. If a client wants to have exposure to renewable energy only through utilities, I will design a portfolio that way. That may cater to somebody who is either older or more conservative by nature. If somebody wants a blend of that plus just pure plays, then we can do this. So in other words, each portfolio kind of has its own life and its own risk-reward profile, and that's what I do. The fund that you're mentioning that I want to set up in the U.S. Is in fact cloned after the fund that I manage for a French bank, which is where I...
Before we go into the fund, let's talk just a little bit more about what you do in managing people's investments. They come to you with the money and basically you play with it, or do you advise them? How does that work?
I can do two things. I can do what is called discretionary management, where I do, as you say, play. I don't like the word that much, but I do make the investment decisions on behalf of the client. Okay? Mm-hmm. In other words, you say, Frank, I have no idea how those stocks move. Here's $1 million. I want utilities and pure plays or something else. Your job. Okay? And I'll decide when to buy, when to sell. This is called discretionary management. There is also non-discretionary management whereby I would call you up and say, Sterling, you know, I think... we should be looking at this. I think we should be buying this company. Take for example, today, Zoltec. Okay. Now, if you want to get involved in that decision process, then you make the decision. Okay. Now, obviously, the non-discretionary investment advisory relationship requires the investor to be savvy, in the sense that not only we deal with, you know, the market trends overall, but we deal with a special group of stocks, which have their own behavior. Okay, for example, I'll give one example which I find funny. I will tell you, Sterling, I think we should be buying Federal Express. Now you're going to tell me, what does Federal Express have to do with renewable energy? Well, Federal Express is the largest funder of research of electric motors or hybrid vehicles. Because as you know, hybrid vehicles work best on a stop-and-go mode, right? So they qualify, so does UPS, by the way. Now, this doesn't show in their either their balance sheet or their income statement. So you're going to tell me, so your next question should be, Frank, why should I buy Federal Express? And my answer will be, well, because I think given the current market trends, I think it's a buy. Now, you either leave that decision to me or you assume that decision. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. And you say, in the second case, okay, go ahead and buy Federal Express. You there?
Yeah. One thing that we also haven't talked about before we go into funds is your track record in terms of how well do you do on the alpha and the beta. What's your history in those two regards in terms of the monies that you manage?
Okay, good question. I run two funds today. With the French bank, which is called Palatine. And by the way, none of those funds are registered with the SEC, so I am prohibited from marketing those funds except to qualified investors. Okay, so that being said, and it's a very big caveat, one fund is a French fund which has $100 million in assets. It's a fund which is sponsored by the French bank Palatine, which is part of the very large French group called Caisse d'Epargne, which means savings bank. And that's the largest fund. The other fund I manage is Cayman-based, and it's called the Europa New Energy Fund. In both, now Europa New Energy is much smaller. It has a couple of millions. Now for the French bank, I manage only the U.S. portion, but I give the overall the overall strategy in terms of theme and in terms of sectors to invest in. Okay. The performance has been quite good, and the next caveat is obviously past performance is not indicative of future performance. But the French fund is audited by the French equivalent of the SEC, which is called AMF. The net asset value is published daily. Everybody can have access to it. Last year, it returned 25% in dollar terms. Now, that includes 10% from currency appreciation. So in euro terms, it was up 15%. But so to put things in perspective, 25% last year compares to some of the funds that were around in the U.S. last year, which were either flat or down. The two that come to mind that were in existence at the time were the Guinness Atkinson, which was down 10% of the year, and the Wilder Hill Eco Index, which was down, which was flat on the year, after having been up 40%. So you recall my comment about volatility, right? If you had bought those funds earlier in the year, you would have lost money. If you had bought mine at the top, you would have lost money, but not as much. And at the end of the day, you made money. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's for alpha. Now, year to date, and I was selling today in this market for one very simple reason, which was our conservative approach. On the French fund, in euro terms, we're up 16%, which means in dollar terms, we're up about 25, another 25%. And the reason we sold was very simple. We don't think there is much upside from here, and we want to protect our gains. Now, when I say we sold, as of this morning, we were 16% in cash. As of tonight, we're probably 23% in cash. So we didn't sell everything, right? But the idea is, again, we're here to hopefully make money without losing money. without running the risk of losing too much. And quite frankly, the markets don't look too good at this juncture. They may go up, they may go down, but we're taking some risk off the table, basically.
Okay. And that's one of the questions I asked you when we were talking the other day, is my assessment of the economy is that the economy in general is tanking right now, but that energy, especially renewable energy, is on the way up because people are looking for newer, cleaner, and especially more affordable energy solutions. And a lot of these newer technologies are actually cheaper than coal, cheaper than natural gas. They just need to develop money to get out there. So I see that as the new trend, that while the general marketplace is on its way down, renewable energies are on their way up. I'd like you to comment on that from your perspective, where you're actually in the business of buying and selling stocks in renewable energy
sector. That's okay, you're making a very good point. You're making a very good point, but I need a pair of tweezers, okay, because there are some thorns in there. For example, let me go back, and now we're going to talk about how to invest. We're going to talk about the general principle of renewable energy. In my mind, renewable energy is one way we coined the term. The other way we can coin the term is infrastructure building. Another way is electricity requirements. Okay? So let me rephrase the concept. Okay, there are a few do's and there are several don'ts. But to make it simple for your listeners, there are two issues here, and they should not be mixed. And when I say this, there's not one day that goes by that I watch TV programs, CNBC, Smart People, etc. They always mix them up. Whether it's the media, whether it's the politicians, those two concepts should not be mixed up. They are, on the one hand, you have what we call stationary power. This means electricity. On the other hand, you have mobile power. This means transportation. Okay? The reason they should not be mixed is because stationary power in the U.S., meaning electricity production, only consumes 2% of our oil consumption, which is 4% of our oil imports. So the first thing you want to react to whenever you hear this or you're looking at an investment, oil has nothing to do with renewable sources. In other words, solar, wind, geothermal, biomass, nuclear, hydropower are all electricity sources. They will not replace oil because oil is not used in the process. Okay?
The point that I brought up to you the other day was that the electric vehicles enable you to use that stationary power for transportation.
Yeah, absolutely. Which brings me to the next point. The other point is mobile transportation. There, clearly, the issue is oil. You know, whether you talk cars or whether you talk airplanes, that's where the oil goes. All right? Now, there are a few ways that you can replace that oil consumption with renewable energy, but as we discussed, it's not, and in fact, as it is typified by fuel cells, you know, I recall my comment about fuel cells. There are some fuel cells that work. The space shuttle, for one, gets its electricity and water, which is the byproduct of the fuel cell, from United Technology. How do we say that? the trucks, you know, in the airport the tugs that carry tug the planes.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are powered by fuel cells. Okay, so there is an application. The problem is at this point, it's very, very expensive. Now we are working on solutions, but again, to go back to my general two themes, stationary power, nothing to do with oil, renewables are not a substitute for oil. The problem there is coal and pollution, simple, and that can be addressed. The other problem is mobile transportation. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we start with this, rephrase the question. I went out on a limb, and I can't recall where I'm at in the thinking process here.
Well, I was saying in a rejoinder to your statement about stationary power has nothing to do with oil, I was saying that the electric vehicle is an exception to that statement in as
absolutely.
Much as it runs on the electrical grid.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is why, I give you the example of Federal Express, and there are a few others. But by and large, when I look at publicly listed companies involved in electric motors, we need a big technology break there. We need a big technology break in storage, in battery, basically. Now there are a few advances, and I have a few stocks that I like, but by and large, most of the stocks are still very chancy.
Okay.
Now, going back to the general theme, in terms of alpha, if you will, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now I gave you the two basic caption that I'm working under, all right? The bigger one, from a practical standpoint, is stationary power. The reason for that is, in as much as we would love to solve the real problem, which is oil. Okay, the real problem is oil, right?
Right.
At $100 a barrel, peak oil, whatever you want to call it, blah, blah, blah.
Right, and by the way,
the real problem is oil. The real problem with oil is that we don't know how to solve the problem. Okay, and again, except at the margin, it's not renewable energy. The answer is electric motors or something along those lines. Fuel cells, they're ways, you know, as an engineer by background, when I hear companies tell me we're 5 years away from finding a solution, it usually means they have no idea what they're doing, and it usually means it's going to take another 10 to 15 years, if that much. I mean, if that little. So... the problem I have with oil is that, quite frankly, there's no substitute. Now, if oil was to go to $150, you know what? I would buy the truck at $65,000, and then it would start to make sense. And I would buy the Prius also. All right? So there are
Let me just remind the listeners that the question that we're addressing right now is the while the general market seems to be going downhill, going into recession, renewables, in contrast, I would think from my perspective, are on the upswing.
Okay,
and
thank you.
What we're addressing.
Thanks for bringing me back on track. That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. The general market is what it is. Clearly, there are a number of things that affect it which have nothing to do with our space and which are mostly centered on financial institutions' problems and the potential impact this could have on the economy, blah, blah, et cetera, et cetera. And there are some merits to the negative thoughts and there are some merits to the not-so-negative thoughts. But you're correct. We probably have seen the best of the quarters in the third quarter in terms of GDP growth and earnings releases. The next question will be, what will be Q4 earnings and what will be Q4 GDP? The next question you want to ask about the general market is what happens to the elections in 2008, but that takes us away from the subject. The fact of the matter is, renewable energy, yes, is standing above the crowd. Now, I said there were do's and don'ts, but I also said there was alpha, right?
Mm-hmm.
Going back to my two captions, even though I tend to put aside a little bit at this point the potential for solutions in the mobile sector, okay, in transportation. In other words, the solutions for oil replacement. I tend to put that down. The fact of the matter is, as far as stationary power is concerned, you will easily understand why it stands above the crowd and the overall market trend or the overall economic trend. And both of them are related. Today we produce 1 million megawatt of electricity in the U.S. All right?
This 1 million megawatts on daily?
1 million megawatts, yes.
Is that, when you say megawatts, that's average across 24 hours or megawatt hours per day or what?
That's the nameplate capacity.
Okay.
That's the nameplate capacity. So I'm not getting into the usage. I'm not getting into overload periods. That's basically what we can produce. All right?
Okay.
Out of this, we produce 100,000 through renewable sources, 100,000 megawatts. Okay? Now, 70,000 megawatts come from hydropower.
That's 10%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, 70,000 megawatts of this 100,000 comes from hydropower, you know, TVA and things like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now we have 24 states. Last I counted, I saw a number of 27, but if you add Florida and, 24 states have what we call renewable portfolio standards, all right, which by and large call for 20% of renewables by 2020, which is, you know, just a stone throw away, right? 10 years, 12 years. If you do the math, first what you have to do is grow the base by about 3% a year. So from a million, you go to 1.3 million within that period, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you take 20% of that 1.3 million, that gives you 260,000, right?
Okay.
The problem with hydropower is that we really don't know where to build more dams. So the only way we're going to increase hydropower capacity is through turbine efficiency. And most people agree that we're going to grow this by another 20,000 gigawatt through the period.
What about these run-of-river technologies where they're able to put smaller turbines in?
Yeah.
You know, like with a 9-foot drop, you can get a fairly substantial, you can power 400 homes.
Yeah, but... When you translate this into megawatts, it gets you to, you know, 4 or 5 megawatts.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot. So I'm talking the large numbers here, right?
Okay.
And that's included in the 20,000 additional megawatts that we can produce from hydropower over the period.
Yeah.
Now, if you go back to the math, which it means that, you know, 70,000 megawatts hydropower grow to 90,000. Fine. We still need to produce 300,000, which means we need 210,000, right?
Okay.
Correct? So basically, X hydropower, we currently produce 30,000 megawatts. We need to go to 210. That's 180,000 megawatts of renewable power, X hydro, which is defined as wind, solar, biomass, and geothermal. Now, if you take a cookie-cutter approach and you tag 1.5 million per megawatt...
Why isn't tide included in that, in wave energy?
White what?
Tide and Wave for one, and there's other technologies that could be listed as well.
Because this is too early, way too early stage. If you, the numbers I pull out come from the DOE, you know, and the rest is Epsilon. You know, a tidal wave, sure, is an interesting technology, but it's been worked on since Leonardo da Vinci, remember? And it may happen. I'm interested, but it's not showing on the radar screen from a large number standpoint. What I'm interested in, and again, you're talking to, you know, to me, not to a venture capitalist. What I'm interested in is where are the big numbers, right? Now, if you stick with my reasoning, I need, 210,000 megawatts at a million and a half at a million and a half dollar per megawatt, rough estimate. So that takes me to about $300 billion over 12 years.
Okay.
Now, this is why our sector, this sector, is of so much interest to people. Because right in front of their eyes, they have $300 billion of expenditures that are going to be spent over the next 12 years. And by the way, this excludes nuclear, which I estimate at about $200 billion. Okay, so we're now at $500 billion, and I'm talking in the U.S. only. So if you want to double that number for the rest of the world, that's fine with me. So we're now talking $1 trillion, all right, with, again, not that many players, which is why some of the stocks, one of the stocks that I owned early on was Foster Wheeler. I bought that stock about 2.5 years ago at $14. The stock is at 150, and I wish I still owned it. I sold it at $60 because I thought it was overpriced. Okay? Just to show you how much interest there is in this group. Another one in the same engineering construction sector. And by the way, none of the stocks that I mentioned are either buys or sells. Again, this goes back to portfolio construction, so I'm giving them as an example. And, you know, before people make an investment decision, they should consult either myself or their own financial advisor. But the point is, in the ENC group, there is another company called Shaw Group. It's based in Louisiana, Baton Rouge. Now, Shaw Group was famous for, the hurricane rebuilding, Katrina and all that, right? Now, because they didn't get as much money from Katrina as the street thought, the stock for a while sold at $22. And you could have picked everything you wanted to own in that company at $22. Today, it's at $75, and that's about a year later. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, why do I speak about Shaw Group? Because in the process, they bought 20% of the consortium, which bought Westinghouse from the British. So with Shaw Group, you have a 20% exposure to one of the two people in the world who know how to build nuclear plants. See what I'm saying? So the point is this, to answer your question, the economy is doing what it is. Politics are doing what they're going to do, whatever. Our group here is differentiates itself for two reasons. One, the numbers at stakes are very large. And when I mentioned the 24 states, those have all Democratic governorships. As you know, governorships last for 6 years. So they have a longer political time span than congressmen or senators, right?
Mm-hmm.
In addition, the governors are really the people who hold the string of the purse strings of the state, right? So they're the one who spend the money.
Right.
And so 24 of those are Democrats, and the ones that are not Democrats are very active, meaning Schwarzenegger and Christ. Schwarzenegger from California, Christ in Florida. So the point is, there is political will to spend that money. Now, I mentioned the don'ts, all right? And as a matter of fact, it pains me because I am not involved in this sector. I'm not involved in two sectors, so that your audience may know. I don't subscribe to climate change, that is anthropogenic climate change. And I can go into the details for that, if you will, which may sound controversial to a number of your listeners, but that's the way I think, based on what I think is good technical evidence.
Right. We'll talk about that in this particular segment.
Yeah. The other problem I have is with solar. I mentioned solar is one of the four sources that everybody talks about in terms of renewables. The problem with solar is when you go through the numbers, okay, it basically costs $1.55 per effective kilowatt to produce with solar. The comparable numbers are 14 cents, 10 times less. For wind, 11 cents for geothermal, and 11 cents for biomass. And the main reason for that is that solar has an efficiency ratio. You were asking, you know, when I said a million megawatts earlier,
mm-hmm.
when you build a solar plant, the efficiency ratio compared to nameplate is 25%. When you build a wind farm, the efficiency ratio is 35% today's state of the art with a 1.5 megawatt turbine. When you build geothermal, it's 98%, and when you build biomass, it's also 98%. Okay. That's where the cost of solar becomes prohibitive. Now, I mentioned to you Schwarzenegger and Christ. Why in the world would they still want solar to be popular? Well, for one very simple reason. Creates jobs. And as you know, this is very much part of the political landscape. We lose manufacturing jobs. The Germans and the Japanese have taught us that if you do build a solar energy industry, you create jobs. And we're about to do the same. Where I have no problem with that per se, really. Where I do have a problem is that this is not disclosed, by and large, to the public. Therefore, nobody is telling you or your audience or the public at large that they're footing the bill for job creation. And I think it should be told. Now, this is why I am out of the sector, which is too bad, because over the past week or so, believe it or not, most solar stocks are up anywhere between 30% and 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm leaving money on the table, but that's the way it is. And, from a valuation standpoint, going back to portfolio constructions, I do have a problem buying stocks which are selling at 200 times earnings.
I understand it in the solar sector that even though it has traditionally been very expensive and is yet quite expensive, there are a number of innovations coming down that will slash the price by as much as down to 10% of what it is now. And those are coming out in the next 18 months.
Absolutely. And then I'll play. Okay, then I'll play. Absolutely. Gallium arsenide, indium copper arsenide, one company which is on a pre-IPO basis, which will probably be launched with a lot of fanfare. It's called NanoSolar. It's backed by the founders of Google. Another one company which is not known, which is totally private, which is, in fact, has the same kind of technology and shares some of the patents with NanoSolar, is called ISET-IC. The whole idea is to increase the efficiency ratio that I mentioned.
Isn't there a priming the pump phenomena here, that with the hype going around solar, to work with that momentum now and to steer that momentum into more efficient modalities where they are cost competitive?
The problem is, Sterling, is this. You know, most technologies, as they ramp up the volumes, they bring the production costs down, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the general idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the more you ramp up the volume, the theory goes that the lower the price. Not true with polysilicon. Polysilicon has an efficiency ratio of 15% plus or minus. Okay, SunPower claims to be higher. Applied Materials claims to be working. The fact of the matter is, the improvement is at the margin. We may get 1, 2, 3% more. That's not going to take the cost of your module down from $3 a watt, $3 a watt, okay, to what it is supposed to be competitive, which is about $1 a watt, all right? And then you've got the installation costs and all that. The only way we're going to do this is by changing the substrates. Thin film is an improvement, but the real technology breakthrough will be when we can get gallium arsenide, Indian copper, gallium arsenide, whatever. When you get those composite materials to actually deliver, instead of a 15% efficiency rate, 35 to 40%.
Yeah, and that's coming in.
I'm sorry?
There are materials that are coming in that will be much cheaper.
Well, they're not cheaper. They're just more efficient in terms of conversion ratios.
And they're both. They're some of them have the same conversion ratio in terms of like the 15% that you're talking about, converting solar energy into electricity, but they're like a tenth the cost. Others are more efficient and not quite as cheap, but are still cheaper. And so the price is moving down on both counts.
No, Sterling, we'll talk about it a little later if you want, but to my knowledge, silicon still is the cheapest material available on Earth because it's basically sand. Okay? And gallium arsenide and copper and indium is expensive. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I have to take a break for a quick minute. Do you mind?
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry about that.
And I should just mention while he's stepping away that we have his website is capmax.com, CAPMAX.com, and there's also a feature page at PezWiki about the technology where you can go to see their kind of their mission statement and overview, and the fact that they are developing a renewable energy fund, contact information there on the website. And there's also, we pulled that information from a feature page of Renewable Energy Access, where they got it from him and we got it from him as well. It's the same information. Also, I should mention today's date. We went away from our Monday show today because we had our time pinning down a schedule and time that worked for both Frank and myself. And so today is November 8th, 2007, in case you're curious what the date is. And this archive will be, of course, if you're listening to this, most likely you found the archive, so I don't need to tell you where that is.
Okay, I'm back.
Thank you. And just one other note, I just gave him your website and contact
information. Yeah, I heard you. Thank you.
Okay, then the other thing I would mention is your name is spelled F-R-A-N-C-K, Frank,
right.
And P-R-I-S-S-E-R-T.
Yeah, and so you can Google me and a few controversial articles that I wrote, which are my convictions basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get back into this conversation about what's going on with renewables in terms of going up while the economy is generally going down right now, and where are those trends going to go? Is that upward trend with renewables going to continue? And let's talk also more about your fund. We have about 4 minutes left before we need to wrap this up.
Okay. I would caution your audience about the relation, going back to my point about stationary energy, stationary power. I would caution your audience against the correlation between high oil prices and renewable energies. Again, those have nothing to do with one another. Okay? Now, Wall Street, you should know, they should know, doesn't care. The media doesn't care. Even the companies don't care. When I hear the advertisement by British Petroleum telling us that they're going to solve our oil independency with renewables, I hate to say this is crap, okay? Now, that's one thing that I would like to alert your audience to. Back to the fund, I mentioned that I will, I am in the business of catering portfolios to individual investors who are interested in the field, and define those portfolios according to their risk profile. Not everybody wants to be in a pure play. Now, if somebody wants to be just pure play, we can do that. But it entails a large level of risk. If somebody wants a more moderate approach, we'll balance the portfolios. If somebody wants a really conservative approach, we can do that too through utilities.
One thing I would really like to have you bring up on this show is your response when you went to look at our top 100 energy technologies, that these are basically off your radar of things that you would invest in because they're so risky, because they're so far out there in terms of not yet being fully developed and proven. And even the ones that are already in the marketplace, for the most part, a lot of those would be outside of your radar. Maybe you can make a comment about that.
And by all means, I think you're doing a great job, quite frankly, which is why, we're talking, because I do think your work adds to the thinking process. And if you can unearth those companies and just show them around, that's good. Now, from my standpoint, if I look at publicly listed companies of the type that you're looking at, okay? Now, you're looking at private companies, but ultimately those companies become public, right? Mm-hmm. If I look at the universe of publicly traded companies, which we call pure plays, which is what you're talking about, worldwide there's about 400 to 500, believe it or not, publicly listed companies of this type. The fact of the matter is, and I hate to say this, but it is true, at least as of today, 80% of those companies are suspect. They're in the business of raising money from gullible people who think a concept is going to work without any knowledge of the technology behind it, okay? And that comes from a number of the companies that I invest in, which are pure plays. They're the one who say, look, beware. And I'm talking about fuel cell companies, I'm talking about biofuel companies, I'm talking about whatever. The fact of the matter is 80% of those 500 companies, which makes it 400, nobody should touch unless they intimately know why they should take the risk, meaning understand the technology. That leaves us with 20% as an investable universe, which is already a lot. It's about 100 companies, right? You know what? Out of those 100 companies, I don't own more than 20. And some of them will never make it. So even though I have this, you know, this process, this investment selection investment process, the fact of the matter is, yes, you're doing a great job. You have to talk about those companies who come up with something new, right? Mm-hmm. But most of them won't see the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
And some will. This is not my business. It is a venture capital business, which is a totally different model. The people who work in venture capital have capacity, intellectual capacity is much greater than mine. They can, you know, they can go into the technology, etc. But bear in mind another thing. Venture capital puts the money in, takes the company public, and forget about it. All right? Again, the best example, ethanol stocks, fuel cell stocks. Venture capital went and funded Aventine. They funded Verisun. They funded Fuel Cell Power. They funded Ballard Power. All those companies are dead, so to speak. They're not dead. Some of them are dead. The point is, when they're out, they're out. Now, in the process, the venture capitalists made money through the IPOs. That's their job. They put $1 billion down, they get $10 million out, they don't care about what happens next. All right? You're not talking to somebody who does that job.
Right.
Good.
And I appreciate that. We need to wrap it up here, but I do want just a really quick synopsis of what is your fund about. Can you give us about 30 seconds of a wrap-up of what
the fund
you want to establish in the U.S.?
Right. The fund that I would like to establish, again, you know, I say I manage individual portfolios because I respect the client's different profiles. If enough people are interested in a fund, which would be basically the same strategy that I employ for the French fund, then I'll set up a fund for those people. It needs to be $20 million in size to cover initial expenses of launching the fund. There's no such fund in the U.S. that I'm aware of. As I mentioned earlier, they are either all pure plays, pure green, or socially responsible. I'm just pragmatic. If enough of your audience is interested, I will contemplate setting a fund like this in the U.S.
Okay, thank you for your time. I really appreciate you coming on and giving us this wrap-up and some opinions about where things are at, where things are going, and a little view into the investment world, not the venture capital world. You mentioned that that's different than what you do. We've been talking to Frank Prissert from Capital Max, Inc. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.